Okay.
That works better, because whatever I want to point out is on this side anyway. I got a pointer. I got to find it. It's in my desk somewhere at the house. Yeah. Here, we got a blue pen. We can use a blue pen. Well, you can see it. All right, is the camera ready? Okay. If you would turn to Genesis chapter 45, and the reason we got the map up this morning is we're going to do a little bit of a history lesson here in a bit when we get to it. We will be talking about, in part of our lesson this morning, the land of Goshen. And we often hear the land of Goshen mentioned in the time that Israel was in Egypt. Well, this morning we're going to see the beginnings of that, how it all came about and all that. And so I just want to point out when we get to it where the land of Goshen is or was. And you can kind of see, you'll be able to see maybe a little bit of the history there. And why Israel was placed there in the beginning anyway, why they stayed there for a long period of time. And so we'll get to that in a moment. So in Genesis chapter 45, we've been talking about Joseph and his life in Egypt. He was, if you remember, the Ishmaelites had bought him from his brothers and had taken him to Egypt as a slave. He had been sold to Potiphar as a servant. Potiphar had turned everything in his home over to Joseph. And Joseph, because of the Lord dealing with Joseph, Potiphar was home. His house was greatly blessed because of Joseph. And then we studied where Joseph was falsely accused of trying to make advancements towards Potiphar's wife. She lied about the situation. He spent some time in prison because of it. And then he was brought out of prison by Pharaoh, who asked him to interpret some dreams that he had had. He did so, and Pharaoh greatly blessed him for that. And Joseph was placed in over the land of Egypt, second in command to Pharaoh. Pharaoh was the only man in the kingdom who was over Joseph. He was even given Pharaoh's signet ring, essentially Pharaoh's signature. And then as his answering of those two dreams that Pharaoh had, for 7 years there was prosperity in the land because of what the Lord had told Joseph about this time. There was going to be 7 years of prosperity and then 7 years of famine. Joseph began to take and store food as far as the government was concerned. It was what we would consider government commodities today. It would be the same, in the same way, I guess you could say. I don't know if it's common knowledge or not. I learned when I was in college and was taking an agricultural class, we studied where even the U.S. government has places where it stores food for the future. And a lot of people say that governments around the world, especially in the Western world, that are at least were at one time thinking in the ways of the scripture anyway, that they got that from the teachings of Joseph. When things were prosperous, these governments will store up food and whatever else, supplies, and then when there's a year of famine or years of famine, then you have something to fall back on. I don't believe we've ever seen, at least since our country's been in existence, a time of famine like what they saw in Egypt in Joseph's day, because the Bible tells us it affected the whole earth, not just the land of Egypt. We know that all the nations around Egypt came to Egypt to seeking to buy food from them, because Joseph had done such a great job of storing it up. And it was all under the leadership of the Lord, of course. We know that Joseph didn't do this on his own. It was all because of the leadership of the Lord. Now, we're going to see today where they're still in the time of famine, the 7 years of famine. We saw where Joseph's brothers came to him. They made a trip to Egypt, got food at the orders of their father Jacob, got food. He inquired about his younger brother and his father. He told him, he kept Simeon, his one of his brothers, in captivity, told him that he would not release him until they brought Benjamin back. They brought Benjamin back, and he threw him a party. They had a big feast. They still didn't know who he was. Today we're going to learn that he finally fesses up and tells them who he is. So in Genesis 45, verse 1, then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, cause every man to go out from me. This was a command from Joseph. He commanded all the men, leave me, let me alone. It wasn't a manly thing in his day for a man to cry, I guess. And he didn't just cry, but he wept. Why? Because he's found out that his family is alive. They're all alive. His father, his 11 brothers, and especially his closest brother, Benjamin, who they shared the same mother. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. So all the Egyptians, and whatever, if there were servants there, whatever nationality they were, the only ones that are left are Joseph and his brothers. That's it. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard. He wept so loud. Now, we don't know, were they just in the next room? Maybe. Wherever they were, they heard the weeping of Joseph. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. They didn't believe him at first, in other words. They thought Joseph was dead, or at least was a slave somewhere. They didn't ever, who is this guy that's claiming to be our brother? He's not one of us. He's in command here. He's the governor of the land of Egypt. They've dealt with him enough to know his role there. And they didn't know what to say. They didn't know who is. He says, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? They're like, Joseph who? and who's his father you're talking about? It hasn't occurred to them that this is their brother, that they sold off into slavery. And remember, once they do realize it is him, you can imagine the fear that comes over them. Because here he is in command in Egypt, and they sold him off into slavery. They lied to, and I don't know how much Joseph knows at this point in time. Maybe he doesn't know the lie that they told Jacob about how Joseph supposedly died, was eaten by a wild animal. He may not know that at this time, so he doesn't, probably, I would guess, doesn't know the whole story, but he does know that they sold him off into slavery. He knows that part. And look at the, even though he's had a fairly good life, but look at the hardships he went through. You know, it would not have been a good thing for a Hebrew man, or a young boy especially, to have to travel with the Ishmaelites in a caravan to Egypt. I'm sure they treated him pretty roughly. Remember, the Ishmaelites were his grandfather's half-brother's descendants. They were the descendants of Ishmael. They didn't care much for the line of Isaac. And then spending time in jail on false accusations, that couldn't have been good either. Even though Potiphar kind of sort of made sure that he was taken care of in the prison, and the governor of the prison, captain of the guard there in the prison, put him over the prisoners, so they had some trust in him still, but it still wouldn't have been pleasant. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now, therefore, be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves, that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. He is, and we'll look at this some more in a moment, but he's telling them, don't worry about it. God has worked this out. God has made it so that I was here at the right time in the right place to not only save the land of Egypt, but to save my family from starvation during this time of famine. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. So they're only 2 years into a 7-year famine. And there's 5 years left. He says there's not going to be earing. In other words, the ears of corn are not going to grow. There's not going to be a harvest. There's not going to be crops to harvest. Now, one of the things that amazes me about this story is they talk about there not being any harvest of the crops, but they still got animals. Were they not eating animals back then? I don't know. I don't know really the custom of their day. But we'll see later where it appears that everybody had cattle and sheep or goats and donkeys and everything else. I'm not sure why. And I understand, you know, especially in that day and time, you had to have these crops to feed the animals even. So maybe that was the biggest concern. If you didn't have crops, you couldn't feed the animals, and if you didn't feed the animals, they die, and then you got nothing. In verse 7, and God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. He's preaching to them. He's telling them, all this is because of God. And imagine this. Joseph has been in Egypt all his adult life. And you can imagine what the Egyptians tried to force him to learn about their false gods. Because of his, it appears as though, because of his, him falling in favor with Potiphar first and then with Pharaoh. Pharaoh even didn't believe in God, and didn't worship the God of Joseph. But he pretty much left Joseph alone as far as his worship. It doesn't appear that they tried to force him to worship their false gods. They wondered why he didn't, of course, but there's no evidence anyway in any of this that they tried to force it on him. So he has stayed faithful to God during this time. Even through everything he's been through, the ups and the downs, he stayed faithful to God. And he recognizes and he expresses this to his brothers that God's the one that put me here. Even though you sold me into slavery, into the land of our enemies, it's God that caused it to happen. God permitted it to happen. We look at our own lives, and oftentimes we wonder why things happen the way they happen. We look at the life or other our family and friends' lives around us and wonder why things happen the way they do. Well, God says he has a hand in everything, even the good and the bad. He has his purpose for all things, and certainly did in the story of Joseph. So now it was, in verse 8, now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh. And this does not mean he fathered Pharaoh. He was not Pharaoh's blood father. It simply means that he was a father-like figure, if you will, to Pharaoh. Remember, Pharaoh greatly admired Joseph. That's why he placed him as high as he did in the government. And Lord over all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. He's not bragging here. You notice he's not bragging about himself. He's saying God is the one that made this possible. He's being humble about this. And remember, he's been weeping over the fact that he's found his family. God has brought his family to him. His father's still alive. His younger brother's still alive. And it's like it's hit Joseph all of a sudden. God is the one that's done all this. Now I understand why I'm here. You ever had that come to you at times when God reveals to you why he put you somewhere? It's a pretty emotional time, isn't it? It can be. And humbling, certainly should be humbling. Haste ye and go up to my father, and say unto him, Thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not, and thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herds, and all that thou hast. And there will I nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. Joseph knows that this famine is a serious matter. They've got 5 more years of famine. Even with the wealth that Jacob has amassed in his lifetime and his sons have helped with, even with all that, there's no way that they're going to survive this. It's going to totally ruin them financially, and possibly even they're possibly going to lose all the animals, all the herds and the flocks that they have amassed. It's possibly going to wipe out part of the family from starvation. He's concerned about all these things. These are real possibilities with this famine. So, with the power that God has given him, not Pharaoh, He talks about Pharaoh, but notice he gives all the power, he gives all the glory to God in this. Because of the power God has given him in Egypt, he makes a decree that he's going to give them the land of Goshen. We'll see in another time, but not for a permanent home, but for a time. Because remember, Jacob's part of the lineage of Abraham, Jacob, and so is Joseph. Joseph and his brothers, his 11 brothers, they are the leaders of the 12 tribes of Judah. They are the 12 tribes of Israel. They are the ones who will eventually, their descendants will go back and conquer the promised land and the land of Canaan, where Jacob now lives. Joseph is telling his brothers, bring my father back here to Egypt during this famine, and I'll give you the land of Goshen. Now, we want to show you on the map. The land of Goshen is this area right in here. Well, it actually goes way over here. And part of it gets on the western side. You get the Nile River right here. So all this on the western side of the Nile River Delta. The richest land in Egypt, even in that day. You remember Joseph's father-in-law, who was a priest in On, the town On, is right here. Helopolis was another name for it, is the Greek name for it, but On is right there. Goshen, it says Goshen right here on the map, so all this was Goshen. It went all the way over to the Sinai Peninsula. It would have, where the Suez Canal is now, that goes up from the Gulf of Suez and goes up to the Mediterranean, that's where it would have been the border of Goshen. And so, he says, thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near me, thou and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herds, and all that thou hast, your children and your grandchildren. Now, I don't know if his brothers had grandchildren by this time or not, maybe, but at least we know they were going to stay there at least long enough for them to have grandchildren. We know later in the story, we see when you get to Moses' day, they stayed there a lot longer than that. Verse 12, and behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. He reminds him, I am your brother Joseph. Come near, come look at me up close. I'm him. I look like you guys. There's no denying the family resemblance. And ye shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all that ye have seen, and ye shall haste and bring down my father hither. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them, and after that his brethren talked with him. So they made up as a family. They've come back together. Everything's been forgiven. The one that these other 10 brothers had done so wrong has now forgiven them. He hugs his brother Benjamin. They cry, have a good cry. He hugs and kisses his other brethren. They have a good cry, and afterwards they talk. What do they talk about? Well, I would think probably catching up on what they missed out on. He's missed out on a whole lot from them. He probably wants to hear what's been going on. How have y'all been doing? Are y'all married? You got kids, grandkids? How's dad? Those types of things. What else would they talk about? Also, the plan on how he was going to get them back there with their dad, with their father, Jacob. And we'll see that in a moment. He has a plan. One thing I want to say about the land of Goshen is, in some of the older Jewish writers claim that part of the reason that Joseph gave Goshen to his family was because they claim that when Abraham and Sarah went to Egypt and Abraham passed her off as his sister and not his wife, and Pharaoh was about to marry her when he found out that she was actually married to Abraham. They say that Pharaoh had given Goshen to Sarah and told her to pass it down to her family at some point. The Bible doesn't tell us that. That is some older Jewish writings. I don't know. It's kind of interesting, though, that it would come down to this, that would be what happens, is the descendants of Abraham are going to wind up with the land of Goshen, at least for a short time. Now, understand, the land of Goshen is not the promised land. Israel has no claim today of the land of Goshen. And I don't know that, at least in modern times, I don't know that Israel has ever made that claim. Now, they have claimed the Sinai Peninsula, and if I'm understanding right, if you were to go to if you were to go to the book of Joshua, you would see where God laid out the boundaries of the promised land. It appears as though the Sinai Peninsula is part of Israel, part of the promised land. But other than the Sinai Peninsula, they've never gone any further west than that. Goshen was the border. Now, you notice he does all this without consulting Pharaoh. And you would think, wouldn't you think anyway, that Pharaoh would not be happy about this? Well, we'll get to it in a few verses. Pharaoh does have a say in this, but it's positive. And remember, in this day and time, in Joseph's day and time, for one, the world was not as populated as it would be later. Egypt was not, it was what we would call a world leader in that day, but they were not, certainly were not overpopulated. There was plenty of room, and for whatever reason, why they had not occupied Goshen, it was a fertile area of land. The children of Jacob were never told to intermingle with the Egyptians. As a matter of fact, if you go back to Abraham, God told Abraham for them not to intermingle with Egypt. And he reiterates that later all throughout the story of Israel, not to intermingle with Egypt. So there's no command here for them to do so, and so it leads me to think anyway that at least in that day and time, the land of Goshen was very sparsely populated by Egyptians. Now, did the Egyptians have to vacate the land? I don't know. Doesn't tell us. We just know that they, at least for a time, they didn't intermingle with them. Or I shouldn't say not just intermingle, but intermarry with them. Verse 16, and the fame thereof was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brethren are come, and it pleased Pharaoh well and his servants. Even Pharaoh and Pharaoh's house, those who were in Pharaoh's house, his other servants, did not know. Remember, these men have been, this is their second trip back to Egypt. They had no clue that Joseph was their brother, that these were Joseph's brothers. They know Joseph very well, and he's very well liked in the house of Pharaoh and in all the land. But here his brothers are, and he has proclaimed his brothers, and it has gone, it has been heard all throughout Pharaoh's house. And it says it pleased Pharaoh. Pharaoh was happy to see Joseph back with his brothers. There's no indication, and I'm sure Pharaoh was thinking, in his mind anyway, that because of the position that Joseph is in the kingdom, that he's not going to have any reason to want to leave. And you notice Joseph has promised his brothers that they can come with their father to Egypt. So he's not planning on leaving. He's planning on staying. And this is, Pharaoh's doubly happy over this. You know, okay, here's my main guy, Joseph, is happy because his family has found him, or he has found them, whichever the case. And he's making preparation for them to come here, so he's not leaving. So we're still going to be a prosperous nation. Verse 17, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, say unto thy brethren, this do ye, lade your beast, and go get you unto the land of Canaan, and take your father and your households, and come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and ye shall eat the fat of the land. Pharaoh's going to give them the best. All because they're Joseph's family. Again, if we could hear Joseph speaking this, I'm sure Joseph would have said, this is because of God. Not because of me, not because of Pharaoh, but because of God. He's already said it, matter of fact. But we know at this point in time, we don't see him speak, but Pharaoh is telling Joseph, tell your family to come. I'll give them the best. Why? Because Pharaoh recognizes Joseph not only as a man of God, but he's also made Pharaoh prosperous. During this time, Joseph is the coffers, the bank account of the kingdom of Egypt is overflowing because he prepared them for the worst. And he says, now thou art commanded, this do ye, take you wagons out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Pharaoh commands it. This is a decree, a direct decree from Pharaoh to these brothers of Joseph. Go load up everything and bring. He's going to send them the wagons to go get your families and to bring them back. This is a much different attitude of this Pharaoh than it is the Pharaoh we see in Moses' day, isn't it? It's even much more different than the Pharaoh we saw in Abraham's day. The Pharaoh in Abraham's day wanted them to leave and get out of there before God destroyed them. He was scared of them. But this Pharaoh has, in a sense, has fallen in love with these people, with Joseph. He's like, if y'all are all like this guy, I want you here. And oftentimes, and we see it in the scripture, we've seen it down through history, when people, even ungodly people, realize that a person who is godly is causing them to prosper, all of a sudden they have a certain respect for the things of God. Not that they believe, not that they're saved, not that they're even God's elect, but they have a respect for God. I believe we saw that in the beginnings of our nation. Not every one of the men who signed our Constitution were saved men. Not all of those who signed the Declaration of Independence were saved men. Not everyone we had this false idea that everybody in the 13 colonies were saved people back then. They weren't. There was wickedness among the people. But they recognized the hand of God through God's people, and they had a respect for it. The same way this Pharaoh has for Joseph and his family. There will be times throughout the history of Israel in the scripture where other kingdoms had a respect for the God of Israel. They were, after how many generations of their neighbors trying to beat them in wars and battles, they finally give up because they know the God of Israel is undefeatable. Verse 20, also regard not your stuff, for the good of all the land of Egypt is yours. So there's going to be things that, he says, also regard not your stuff. In other words, don't worry about what you got to leave behind. Bring what you have to. Bring your wife and your wives and your kids, your servants, bring your flocks, whatever you can carry in the wagons. But the stuff you have to leave behind, don't worry about it. I'm going to give you the best that Egypt has to offer. And the children Well, I'll give you an example. I know if you read some of the stories of the wagon trains that went from the east to the west in our nation in the early and middle 1800s, they often talked about the land of Goshen, didn't they? You ever wondered why? This right here. Because Pharaoh sent wagons to bring Joseph's family to Egypt, to Goshen. They were looking at the west coast of our nation as the land of Goshen. And you'll hear that talked about. You hear it talked about in, if you ever watch any movies that were about that time period, documentaries, you read some of their writings, you see where our forefathers in our nation considered, when they traveled, it was similar to Joseph's family going to Egypt, the land of Goshen. It was an exciting time for them. There was a famine throughout the land. It's not just a famine, but remember, it's usually a famine comes about because of a lack of rain and things begin to dry up. Why else would you not have crops? You also have, usually during times of famine, you have pestilence. You have hordes of grasshoppers or whatever they had in their day, locusts, come in and wipe out your crops. So things were starting to get bad. This had been 2 years into this. Things had started to get bad in Egypt. In Canaan. And so they were ready to leave. God had provided a way that would persuade them to want to leave Canaan. And the children of Israel did so. And Joseph gave them wagons according to the commandment of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the way. To all of them he gave each man changes of raiment, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of raiment. You noticed from the time that Joseph has met Benjamin again in Egypt, he just goes all out for his younger brother. Benjamin, from our study, when we looked at when they sold him into slavery, it appears Benjamin was not with them. Benjamin was still back at home with his dad, with Jacob. So he had nothing to do with that part. But there's also the fact that Benjamin and Joseph have the same mother and the same father. They are the two most favored sons of Jacob. They have a special bond between themselves because of their mother. And to his father he sent after this manner: 10 asses laden with the good things of Egypt, and 10 she asses laden with corn and bread and meat for his father by the way. So he sends everything they need to go there and to come back. Not just for his brothers, but for his father also. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed. And he said unto them, "See that ye fall not out by the way. Don't wander off. Do what you're told. Go there and come back. Don't," you know, in the past, what would they have done? They'd have been tempted to take the money and run, wouldn't they? And he knows what they were like when they were younger. Verse 25, "And they went up out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father, and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive, and is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he believed them not." They had told him he was dead. And he had been grieving all these years because his son Jacob, his favorite son, had died. And not had just died, but had been slaughtered by a wild animal, according to the other 10 sons. In the land of Canaan, and let's see if I can find, I can't remember the name, somewhere in here, Zoar, Tamar is right in here, somewhere in this area would have been where Jacob was at this time. So they would have had to travel, get this pen so that my arm's not in the way, they would have had to travel from here all the way to here. Essentially, that's almost as far as Moses and the Hebrew children went the first time they got to the land of Canaan, and remember the Lord turned them back because of their sin and sent them back into the wilderness, and they wandered for 40 more years, which meant they went all around the Sinai Peninsula, the wilderness. Now, so this was not an overnight journey. It took them some time to get there. He believed them not. Jacob didn't believe them. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. He saw evidence. Jacob, I believe by faith, believes now that his son is still alive. He hasn't seen him physically, but here's the evidence. All the wagons. And it doesn't really tell us how many. We know that he sent at least 10 asses laden with the goods of Egypt, it tells us, and 10 she-asses. So there's at least 20 donkeys that he sent, plus the wagons to carry all the women and children. And Israel, this is speaking of Jacob. Again, we see in God's word where God changes his name from Jacob to Israel for a purpose. This is to signify that he's the head of not just the family, but the head of the nation of Israel. And Israel said, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die." So Jacob realizes that Joseph is truly alive. And this caravan that's come to pick him up, to take him there, is enough for him to believe that it's true. And he says, "I'm going to go and see my son before I die." I forget now, in the next chapter we'll see where Jacob is, he's over 130 years old at this time. He's an old man. He knows his time is short. I can't imagine being 130 something years old and have to take this journey in the back of a wagon. That could not have been a pleasant trip. But at the same time, knowing where he was going, I think that made up for it. That helped him to endure the hardship of the trip. And remember, what we're seeing here is at this point in time is the whole nation of Israel. The beginning of the 12 tribes of Israel. You've got the 12 brothers. You've got their father Jacob. That's it. There's nobody else that's part of Israel at this time. How many people were these? Were there at this time? I don't know. It doesn't tell us. We don't know how many of Jacob's brothers were married, how many of them had children or grandchildren, were Joseph's stepmothers still alive? It doesn't really tell us. I don't believe Jacob had any other children. It doesn't tell us that. All it talks about is these 12 brothers. What about their sister? Remember Dinah? There's no mention of her ever again. We don't know if she was there, if she had a family. We don't know. There's no clear telling of how many people there would have been here. But you can imagine if 12 brothers, or 11 brothers actually, and Benjamin, as far as we know at this time, Benjamin's not married. He's still a young boy. Some say probably his late teens, early 20s maybe, but not married. But his other brothers were certainly old enough to be married and have children. And his older ones may have even had grandchildren. And we know Joseph has a wife and two sons, which they are already in Egypt. But the whole nation of what would become Egypt, of Mount, what would become Israel, is about to move and leave Canaan for the first time since Abraham and move to Egypt, the land where they've always been told not to have anything to do with. But God has provided a way through Joseph for them to go to Egypt, and they'll prosper for a time. They're going to grow. God's going to cause them to bear children and become a great nation within the nation of Egypt. So much so that when Moses' day comes, the Pharaoh in Moses' day is afraid of them. And the people of Egypt in their day, and when we get to that part of the story, we'll see where there's going to come a day where the people of Egypt have forgotten Joseph and have forgotten who he was, what he did for them, why the people of Israel are in Goshen. They've made slaves out of them, and they're scared of them because they begin to outnumber the Egyptians. So we'll stop there for now. Next time we'll go to chapter 46, and we'll see Jacob's trip to Egypt and his interaction with Pharaoh. Remember these things. This is a good story, I think, in telling what God can do, even when we're having hard times, even if we're having if there's a famine in the land, if our life is not going so well. It's not always our fault. Sometimes it's God sending us through a trial. He sent sent Joseph through some trials, didn't he? And look where he wound up. Look at where we're going to wind up after living through this life. Something much better than the land of Goshen, huh? A land much greater. So we'll stop there.